Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Frollo, he's thrown his nightcap, and Yuppie's been thrown out of the ball game.
Tim Raines, enthusiast.
Tim Raines, yeah! Welcome to the Hall of Fame. Tim was rock solid playing.
Is that right, what?
Jonah Carey with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight on another Friday. I'm Connor. Mark Grody is in for Dan. Friday at 11 means just one thing. It's time to talk baseball with Jonah Carey. Jonah, first and foremost, my man, we're going to talk baseball. We're going to talk a lot of Cubs. We're going to talk a lot of White Sox. But I know you're a Raptors fan and a Canadian first. That was some impressive stuff. Congratulations, man.
Thank you. I would describe myself as a casual Raptors fan, but I think when all of Canada is kind of behind one team, you tend to jump on board. It was really cool. And the thing that's really interesting, too, is, and I don't know if this is like a Chicago-St. Louis thing. Like, I don't know how the Blackhawks fans felt about the Blues winning, but here in Montreal, there's this perception that, well, you know, the two cities hate each other, they're big economic rivals, a lot of Montrealers moved to Toronto, the sports teams have been rivals, and I think that kind of got dashed forever, that the younger generation has decided this isn't a thing, because all of downtown Montreal was celebrating along with Toronto, so that was pretty cool to see.
We were not happy with the Blues winning.
No, not happy at all. Jonah, I think the only thing that could unite the fan bases of the Blues and Blackhawks is like an alien invasion or something, like an existential threat. Like, I think that's what it would have to be. Hey, let me ask you, there have been a lot of conversations from Cubs general manager Jed Hoyer and also executive VP Theo Epstein about the potential return of Ben Zobrist to the Cubs lineup at some point this season. It seemed unthinkable just a couple of weeks ago that this would work itself out this way, but it seems to. I wonder what you know from a national perspective and how those two things, Craig Kimbrell's contract and him, are tied together or not, as they've been talking.
Yeah, I mean, the first part, who can really know unless you're, you know, involved in the personal off-field stuff that's going on with the Zobrists. So that's hard to say. As far as the salary refund, yeah, I would assume that would get refunded back to the refund. So it wouldn't necessarily be freed up salary if Zobrist is on the field, obviously. So that's something they'll have to address. And it creates a sticky situation because here's the dirty little secret, and I'm a Zobrist fan. I have been for many years. Ben Zobrist is probably not the best option that they have at this point. I think I'd rather have David Bodie out there every day, considering the way that he's been hitting. He's a pretty good ball player. He's younger. He offers more upside. Zobrist is a useful player. I'm not saying you wouldn't want him on your roster, but for the salary that he's, you know, due, and considering the Kimbrel situation, it creates a sticky sort of thing. Now, they're not. I don't think they're going to screw the guy over. I think one way or another, they'll figure it out. But I think the end result here is that the Ricketts family might have to open their pockets a little wider because I think they might end up paying both of them.
Jonah, there's another dirty little secret in Major League Baseball these days, and that is that the ball is juiced. Last night, John Lester hit up and given up bombs to Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy, and David Freese in what was ultimately a Dodgers 7-3 win over the Cubs. And Lester kind of alluded to it in somewhat of a snarky way that you know, the ball is juiced and those are shots that should not have necessarily gone over the wall. My question to you is, everybody has talked about it. I'm sure you've talked about it. Real baseball people discuss it. Why is it okay that the ball is juiced and there's not further investigations about it? Like I said, it's like a dirty little fun secret that everybody talks about and winks, but this is real to pitchers. Why isn't there further investigation about it?
Because the league is, they're the ones responsible for it. I mean, let's go down the rabbit hole a little bit, but if systemically every ball in baseball is juiced, how the heck did that happen? Was it a rogue actor? Was it Sammy Sosa metaphorically corking every single bat in Major League Baseball except it's balls instead? Of course not. It's a league. So what investigation are you going to do on yourself? You know, that's sort of where we're at with that. So,
but isn't it sort of baseball cheating on their players then? Isn't it Major League Baseball cheating on starting pitchers in Major League Baseball? And, yeah, you can't cork bats, you can't scuff the baseball, but Major League Baseball, they could cheat on their own pitchers apparently.
Well, the thing is that it's, you know, here's how it was described, right? So Rob Manfred got asked about this point blank when kind of the first round of ball juicing occurred, if you will, a couple years ago. And what he said was there's a normal range. And this is within the normal range. But it's like saying that Jose Altuve and Aaron Judge are both within the normal range of heights for baseball players. Technically, that's true. But Aaron Judge is a very, very different size than Jose Altuve. But we're okay with the ball being Aaron Judge size in this case, you know, if we're going to stretch it a little bit here. So that's really where we're at. It's a cop-out answer, but it really has to do with, you know, commissioner and the rest of baseball saying we want to try ways to stimulate interest in the game, and this is one of the ways that we're going to do it. I don't think there's anything more complicated than that.
Talking Cubs and White Sox and MLB with Jonah Carey. Follow him on Twitter at Jonah Carey. Sportsnet and the Opener podcast are his gigs. This hour brought to you by Continental Autosports. Searching for the pre-owned exotic of your dreams, search Continental Autosports for the Continental Difference. Jonah, a lot of conversation has gone on about the Cubs' home record versus their road record. Do you find anything meaningful in a full season home-road split or performance? Is that enough to really find out whether there was something going on, or do you just need more than that?
It's one piece of information that I would look at among many. I mean, let's say that the Cubs go to the playoffs and they're playing the Dodgers, as a for instance, and the Cubs are playing at Dodger Stadium. I would look at that to some extent, but I would also look at the type of curveball that I'm going to face that day from Rich Hill. I would look at what the weather's going to be. I would look at the health of the Cubs roster. I would look at a whole bunch of different things. It can be somewhat predictive, but, you know, I think that it's minor compared to the other factors as well, just because handedness and defense and quality of opposition or whatever are going to take precedence. So on the margins, I'd look at it. I think the only team where you really, really go nuts about it is if you're the Colorado Rockies writers and you're trying to follow that team. And I lived in Denver for 6 years and witnessed it firsthand as well as in the numbers. It's not just a home-road split. It's not just a team hits well on the road and they don't, or rather at home, and they don't hit well on the road. It's that there's a double penalty on the road. They hit worse than you would expect based on normal splits. The OPS split is often like 200 points per season. That is cataclysmic. So I think if you get beyond the Rockies, you just, you know, kind of relegate it to relatively minor status, although one you can look at on the margins.
Is Cody Bellinger the best player in baseball? I mean, it's two home runs last night, both of them, as it turns out, against lefties. Is he the best player, you think?
Guys, I'm really sad to hear that Mike Trout died. I didn't know that. I'm so sorry. That's terrible.
I mean,
no,
right,
dude,
we
of
are
course
not.
Mike Trout.
Trout
is the best player in baseball. You can't be good for 2.5 months and then supplant somebody else. It doesn't work that way. It was the same way with Kershaw with the best pitcher thing. It had to be taken from him, and eventually you could argue that it was Scherzer who took it, whoever you want to make the case for, but Kershaw ceased to be the best guy. But, you know, the equivalent of a long slump or a long hitting streak is not enough to supplant somebody. No way. Bellinger is playing very well. He's got a chance to be the MVP of the National League. He is not a better player than Mike Trout because he doesn't have the resume to suggest that we should call him a better player than Mike Trout.
So the White Sox have been far more entertaining, and especially over the last 2 or 3 weeks than some expected. I figured him to be as entertaining as this, but probably not hold a 33-34 record this late. If you look at the wild card standings, Jonah, which I know you do, and you're not telling anything you don't know, but they're a couple of games out, 2.5 from that last wild card spot. If I'm Rick Hahn, if I'm making decisions, I'm still trading assets to bring back other pieces to bolster future runs. Not a whole bunch of big-time pieces. I'm not moving anybody with big, big names, but Alex Colomé is tradable to me. You know, James McCann might be tradable to me if the offer is right. I wonder what you're doing.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not surprised. I do over-under picks every year, and although the White Sox were not at 85, they were at 74.5, I believe, I banged the over. I had the White Sox as, you know, I thought they would be better than that. I figured they'd be 500, maybe even a stitch better if things broke right. I didn't expect Lucas Giolito to turn into Bob Gibson, but, you know, here we are. And I think that creates some interesting scenarios, and it makes you ask those questions. You know, as far as McCann and Colomé go, I think those are two perfect examples, because Colomé is a relief pitcher, and I know that there's more emphasis on relief pitchers within the game, but what we should really be talking about is more emphasis on building a deep bullpen that can get outs rather than overemphasizing one guy, because the bottom line is every guy eventually breaks down. You know, even somebody like Kenley Jansen, who was the standard bearer in baseball, he's given up, I don't know, it's something like 17 home runs in his last 70 innings or something like that. Everybody eventually reaches the end of the road, and Colomé does not have that pedigree. He could turn into a pumpkin any day now. So, you know, that cutter is not always going to get guys out. So I think that's one. And McCann is just clearly playing over his head. But catcher is such a wasteland in baseball that there will be at least a team or two that will take a chance, that will say maybe this breakout is legitimate, we want to see more. I think where the rubber hits the road is what do you do with Jose Abreu? Because Jose Abreu is, you know, an all-star caliber performer, consistently very good, but maybe possibly not going to be part of the next winning White Sox team. I think he can be and will be, but if you want to make that argument, that's fine. That's where the tough decision comes in. I'm inclined to hold on Abreu, but if the team really didn't think that they were where they need to be, that's kind of the X factor, the wild card.
So it is Lucas Giolito pitching tonight against CC Sabathia. Giolito has a chance to become the first White Sox player to throw 7-plus scoreless innings in 3 straight starts, the first player since 2001, a guy named Mark Burley. Is this start against, because it is the Yankees and because of how potent they are offensively, is this kind of a more important start for Giolito in the proving ground? Because there is the fallback, the default that some people have that, well, he's done this against, you know, Kansas City and Cleveland, although he did have the shutout at Houston. Is this start more important for him because of the bright lights of the Yankees?
I think yes. I mean, I'm a huge Giolito fan. Outside of Chicagoans, I've got to be up there. I followed him last year, and even when he was struggling, I just thought, wow, he's got such cool stuff. He's got that, you know, heavy fastball. He's got the hammer, and he's got a change, and I wonder if things could work out for him. And now that it's working out, it's very exciting. But it has been against weak competition for the most part. The Houston start is terrific. But, you know, you play in the Central and you're just going to get a bunch, except for the Twins who are beasts, but you're going to get a bunch of cupcakes on your schedule, and he's been lucky in that respect. So I think that we do want to see a little bit more. And furthermore, by the way, they're playing this Yankees team is not the same thing as playing the Yankees with Stanton and Judge. But I think if we nitpick too much, we say, well, no Stanton. Well, not this team. Well, I mean, look. You have to beat everybody who's on your schedule. You can't control who you pitch against. He happens to pitch in the Central. He happens to have gotten a good deal. That's fine. Let's see how it goes against the Yankees. But if he gives up 5 runs, I'm not necessarily discrediting the rest of his season.
If you bumped into Rick Hahn at like a Tim Hortons up there and you guys just got to chatting or whatever, and he's like, hey, you know what? Next season, I got a bunch of pitchers that I've got to work into the rotation. And I got to do it kind of slowly. They're all going to be rookies. It's going to be Dylan Cease, and then I got Kopech coming back at some point. Rodon might be back in there. We got to work a bunch of guys into the rotation. What should I look out for? What would you tell them?
I'd want more innings than that. I mean, I'd look out for, you know, not overusing guys. I think that, and that's something that other teams are facing now, too. You look at the San Diego Padres, I think, is an example of what the White Sox could be facing. They just sent their exciting right-hander Chris Paddock down to the minors. Mm-hmm. To A-ball, and basically what they're doing is they're having him rest. He's not going to pitch, and they're going to limit his innings. It happens that it stomps on his service time too, so be it. That's how it goes. But you know, in this day and age, I think teams are very cognizant of that stuff. And if you have somebody who's only thrown, you know, 125 innings at any professional level, to say, okay, you know what, you're going to be our guy, you're going to pitch for the season, and if things break right, you're a number two starter in the postseason too, that's 220 innings. It's just inconceivable. You can't do that. So I think that's why you look for more arms. You know, to be quite frank, I thought that the White Sox would have been, you know, maybe not the leading candidate, but an interesting candidate for Dallas Keuchel for that reason. That even though they have Cease in the waiting in the wings, and even though they have Kopech, and, you know, these guys will, Cease is this year, Kopech will probably be next year, that you could make the case that just getting somebody who can eat innings and be a little bit better than average would have a lot of value. And I think that's what you're going to look for in the offseason. They're going to go out and they're going to explore free agency. There's not a ton out there, but they'll look for somebody decent. You know, the same way the Texas signed Lance Lynn. I think that's the kind of thing you're looking for if you're the White Sox, is you don't lean on those young guys because they can get good collectively, but you can't expect, you know, 5 200 inning guys if you've got somebody, one guy coming back from this and one guy coming back from TJ, and this guy's never thrown in the big leagues, and this guy's done this. You have to have some sort of backdrop, because let's say the White Sox do get good, the worst thing in the world you want is, oh, wow, the White Sox are in first place, or the White Sox are a game out. You know what? Dylan Cease and Carlos Rodon and Michael Kopech, we're going to send you to Siberia for 4 weeks because we need to rest you. I would not want to see that.
No, very tough to pitch in Siberia. The ball flies. Ian, one more on the Cubs before we let you go here. I'm looking at Ian Happ's numbers in Iowa, and they don't matter. Don't scout the stat line, but it's typically Ian Happ. It's a low average, it's a high on base, and it's a little bit of slugging, but not a whole hell of a lot. Do you figure him to be in conversations? Will teams call interested in Ian Happ when the Cubs try and add a veteran arm or a shutdown lefty or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's for a relief pitcher, I think that it's in play. I don't think you're going to get like a serious start or anything like that for Happ. Maybe he's the secondary or tertiary piece in a trade. But he's, you know, somebody you take a chance on. I think if nothing else, he's got the available service time on his docket. Yep. He's versatile. We know he can play multiple positions. So I would certainly roll the dice on him and take a shot on him if I was another team. But if you're talking primary piece of a trade, I think that's relief pitcher territory.
Jonah, appreciate it as always. Enjoy the weekend and enjoy the warm glow of a Raptors championship, my friend.
Thank you, fellas.
You got it. Jonah Carey joins us every Friday at 11. U.S. Open coverage, by the way, brought to you by BMW Championship at Medina Country Club, August 13th through August 18th. Visit BMWChampionship.com. Checking the leaderboard here real quick before we get to Richard Deitch and talk about this Raptors title. Justin Rose leads at 6 under par. Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, Louis Oosthuizen, they're all at 5 under and have a host at 4 under. Aaron Wise, Chesson Hadley, Matt Kuchar is there as well. Mark Grody is in for Dan Bernstein today. I'm Connor McKnight. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We'll get back to a little NBA conversation and exactly what this championship for the Raptors has done for the NBA in the country north of the border. Richard Deitch will join us on the other side of a quick timeout here on 670 The Score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Big Y, what's up, Doc?
Man.
How you feeling?
Just limping around, but I ain't got to play no more games.
So, you feel me? I'm feeling good, baby.
Here, man. You deserve it.
Little MVP.
Man.
Oh, yeah, this nice.
This is real nice, man.
Take a selfie, man.
Here, man, take your trophy.
Man, enjoy it, man. You deserve it, too. You most valuable
player of the night, man. Look at that.
You came out.
I had to make sure we. I'm gonna hold that man trophy for you, man. I'm gonna hold my trophy for
you. I don't need it. I just want Larry OB.
That's all that matters.
The journey, man. The journey.
It's Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry and Rachel Nichols in a little moment after the Raptors won their first title in franchise history. You heard Kawhi say it. I don't need it. I got the Larry OB. I'm good to go. He's got himself a title. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Mark Grody is in for Dan. I'm Connor. We head to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. On the hotline, we'd find Richard Deitch of the Fan 590 and Sportsnet Canada. Richard is joining us now. Richard, congratulations to the city on a title. Tell us what it was like and where you were when it all came down, man.
Yeah, first of all, there'll be nothing hot about this interview, given I'm working on 2 hours sleep. It's great to be with you guys. I certainly wasn't at Oracle. I watched the game from my home in Toronto, and then I live on the east side of town. That's not really going to mean anything to you guys in Chicago, but I went out to what is the main street where I live, and this is about 15, 20 minutes from downtown, from, you know, where Jurassic Park would be and all that. And where I was, 1 o'clock in the morning, cars all over the place honking, people waving flags, people out drinking, cheering. I mean, that was like one little slice of the larger story in the greater Toronto area and across Canada, where people were celebrating this and you know, just sort of taking it all in. It's a you got to keep in mind, at least in Toronto, they haven't won a major championship since '93 with the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. The country is still a hockey country, and in this city, in Toronto, the Maple Leafs haven't won since 1967. The Raptors have their tortured history, basically, of being a good team, but, you know, every year running into LeBron James, who somehow destroyed their will and psyche. And so it's a big thing. I mean, it's a really massive thing in Toronto. It's a major, major event in Canada. You know, as an American in Canada, I'm sort of experiencing something unique. And there is something to Canadians, I wouldn't call it an inferiority complex, but there is a little bit of like little brother to big brother in the States. And so winning an NBA championship and the first NBA title in Canada, really, like, I don't think it's an overstatement to say, like, it feels like that sports validation for a lot of fans up here. And so I can't overstate how big it is, because it really is big.
What did you think when you're watching the end of this game, when it gets a little bit convoluted? Toronto has basically won the thing, but then Mike Breen starts to go into the dramatic championship diatribe, and then they have to stop it, and then there's still free throws, and just kind of almost like, I mean, I'm sure it was great and Toronto doesn't care, but like, it was just like there's a little bit of anticlimax there towards the end with the broadcast.
Yeah, I'm thinking Kawhi's going to look great in a Clippers uniform, because, you know, I'm already fearing that moment when he leaves our fine city. No, it was a very, very weird ending to that game. If you're talking about sort of production and broadcast-wise, I'm a big Mike Breen fan. I think he is first rate. And when it comes to, like, broadcasters like Breen or, you know, Vern Lundquist or, you know, name whoever you think is sort of a top shelf A-level broadcaster, you know, you want them to have the moment of at least sort of calling the championship in a flow, even if it's a blowout. You know, you do get, generally speaking, you know, ball running down 19-18-17, you get to zero and you can sort of make a call. But that was so odd between the tech, the timeout that didn't exist, even the rebound of Steph Curry 3. So yeah, it was very anticlimactic. And watching that game, and again, you know, I can only imagine what it was like for Raptors fans. You know, you're watching that game with 3.9 seconds left. Curry misses, so you feel like, you know, man, they finally won a championship. But then there's, you know, in real time, like another 5 to 10 minutes, it felt like, of play. So, yeah, very odd. You know, it was this odd, weird feeling, and then the players celebrated. Not to mention, you know, you didn't celebrate on your home court. You celebrated on the road, and those road wins, even though I'm sure Raptors fans are psyched, it's different. I mean, I think you guys know that in Chicago. It just always feels a little bit different when you win on the road as opposed to winning at home. So you're exactly correct. That final stretch with Breen, Van Gundy, and Jackson was kind of an odd one for a championship. But you know what? It was a very sorrowful series, given what happened to Durant, given Klay Thompson's ACL injury. You know what I mean? It was a very odd finals, given this larger context of what happened to two of the game's great players.
Yeah, it's really, talking with Richard Deitch here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show about the NBA Finals last night, Raptors clinching their first title in franchise history. There are so many storylines in this series, and they are going to reverberate for months, perhaps even years. You mentioned Durant and Clay. You've got Kawhi's future. You have Masai Ujiri's future. You've even got, you know, cool storylines, local interest stuff like Fred VanVleet, Rockford's Own. I mean, people poured out of their homes to watch, to form their own Jurassic Park in Rockford, to watch that dude hit some big-time shots. And I wonder which storyline, which one is going to matter most for NBA media, and which one might actually push forward the NBA's cause in Canada more than anything else?
Those are good questions. A couple questions there. So first off, let me just say Fred VanVleet is one of the great late round, second round picks that we've seen this decade. I've watched this guy all year. He has literally no fear. He is such a confident shooter. He plays so much bigger than he is. I remember him, obviously, at Wichita State. I don't remember him being this great and this clutch, but that guy will be beloved in Toronto no matter what happens. And quite frankly, I love the fact that Hubie Brown voted for him Finals MVP. I know there's a lot of people like, oh, Hubie Brown's a contrarian. He's just doing that for attention. Relax. The dude's 85 years old. He's had a better career than you. He doesn't need the attention. he truly believed Fred VanVleet was the Finals MVP. And I think it's a great argument that they're not winning that series without VanVleet, as great as Kawhi is. So that's some love for Rockford Zone. Secondly, to me, I think the biggest story that reverberates in the NBA has to be Durant, just because that was really that would have been the focal point in terms of where he went. I feel like all these other moves sort of follow him. You know, so if he goes to New York, let's say takes Kyrie with him. If he went to Brooklyn solo, if he took Kyrie with him, if he stayed in Golden State, you know what I mean? All these other free agent moves sort of, I feel like the reverberations come initially from Durant. In terms of Toronto, I think they will be a good team. They have obviously a lot of assets to play with in terms of like guys like Pascal Siakam. You guys mentioned Fred VanVleet, Lowry, Gasol come off the books, Serge Ibaka come off the books in a year. So if they blow it up or rebuild, they're going to have a ton of money to spend. But the major story, of course, is Kawhi Leonard. Because if he stays even for a year or two, it changes the entire shape of the franchise. I mean, they'll be finals contenders for the next 2 years minimum. If he stays 5 years, I think it could have a fundamental change in Canadian basketball, because you're going to have one of the glamour teams in the NBA in this country. If he leaves, the one thing I can tell you guys is people will certainly be disappointed, but this will never be a San Antonio situation. Kawhi Leonard will be beloved in Toronto for the rest of his life. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if, even if he played a year here, 15, 20, 30 years from now, they put a banner up for him in whatever arena they're playing at. Wow. Maybe not retire his number, but they would put some kind of banner. His the shot against Philadelphia is already on the side of Scotiabank Arena. You can walk by Scotiabank, and it's a mural on the side. Fans go up there and take photos of it. The guy will never be forgotten. Even if he's here for 1 year, he will be beloved in this city forever. But that's the big story, I think, for Canadian basketball, is what's Kawhi going to do. And then lastly, and this is sort of just goes sociologically, I think it's going to be a generational moment for basketball in Canada. You had so many kids between the ages of like 7 and 15, 7 and 18, who were watching this postseason run, who fell in love with this team. They're multi-generational, multi-ethnic. I think they're going to be basketball fans for the next 50 years. So I think it's a big moment in this country.
Did you get any indication whatsoever on, does Kawhi love it in Toronto? Do you think he's going to stay?
I mean, if I had to guess today, I think he's going to leave.
Okay.
You know, I hope to be wrong. And I think it's close. I think it's like a 51-49 thing. I think the Raptors have done everything possible to keep him here. He trusts the medical staff, and that's first and foremost the most important thing for Kawhi. They're a first-run organization who cares about winning. That's major, major prominent for Kawhi. I know he likes his teammates. Very close with Serge Ibaka. Become very, very tight with Lowry. I know he likes VanVleet and Pascal. So all the things are there to bring this guy back, and obviously they can pay him the most money. But I think Kawhi Leonard wants to see what free agency is like. He's earned that given his age. And I think at the end, I think he's a California guy. That's where his family is. Riverside is home. I think he's always wanted to play in California. And I think that's going to be the draw. I do think winning the title helps the Raptors. I think it brings Kawhi a little bit closer. I think if you're a Toronto fan, the thing you should, in my opinion, again, I could be wrong, you know, the Howard Becks and Woj's know better than me, but I think your best case scenario would be for him to sign a short-term deal with an option, and then that gets him to like that 10-year mark where you know the guys can get like 35% of the salary cap in these major contracts, and you know, you make the guy a promise like, listen, if we're not great in 2 years, you can go. We're going to blow it up, and we wish you the best. That's what I think they have to hope for. But, you know, I think Kawhi has signaled for a long time that he wants to play in California. For Kawhi's sake, I hope he does look at the Clippers roster right now, and I hope he looks at the Raptors roster right now. And I think in terms of if you're looking to win next year, I don't think it's close. I think the Raptors are a championship team sitting there, and I think the Clippers still have to get that second guy along with Kawhi to really be the Western Conference favorite. But the guy's amazing. He's the closest thing I've seen to Jordan. He is not Michael Jordan, but he's the closest thing in terms of sort of the excellence and consistency game after game after game.
Richard, humility aside, as we let you go here, few know better on the media side of things than you. Can you confirm or have you heard any about reports that ESPN's NBA Countdown may be changing up its look and the desk and its staff? What is one of the prime NBA shows going to do with their lineup here?
Yeah, so first off, credit Sports by Brooks, the website, put that out there first. From what I've heard, I don't think any and he reported that essentially the whole set is sort of going to blow up except for Jalen Rose. I don't think they've made final decisions, but from what I'm hearing, I think there is a lot of smoke there in terms of some significant changes. I know they've been kicking around the idea of maybe the Jump or some version of the Jump becomes their pregame show. Mm. That would save them. Maybe "save" is the wrong word. That would mean they wouldn't necessarily have to expend more money. You know, they'd already have the NBA talent that exists there. You know, I think Chauncey Billups and Paul Pierce can do things elsewhere at ESPN as opposed to Countdown. The one thing about that show is the only consistent thing about NBA Countdown is change. The only thing that show does every couple years is change its cast, and they cannot. It's interesting. They've been guy. They're so. How do I sort of phrase this? I think it's in their head so much that people love inside the NBA that they're always sort of trying to tinker with Countdown, and I think the tinkering ends up hurting them because as a viewer, you never get used to who the cast is for an extended period of time. But I do think that, I think, let's put it this way. I don't think there's any way the four people you saw this year will be the four people or three people or five people you'll see next year.
Richard, appreciate it. Great stuff. Get some sleep and enjoy a championship for that city.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Richard Deitch of the Fan 590 and Sportsnet Canada, basking in the glow of very little sleep and a title. You know that well. You know that move well.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
Sleep after a title.
Absolutely. I mean, from obviously covering with the Cubs, but then even back to the Blackhawks and their title. I mean, back in their first title, I was doing morning updates for the Dunn, Mully, and Hanley show. So
right.
there was no sleep involved throughout a lot of that.
I did not sleep that day either. Lawrence Holmes is coming up in transition. We got something cool to tell you about that we are up to next week as well. Mark Grody's in for Dan. I'm Connor. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show on 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. We have had a packed, packed show. What with the Cubs falling to the Dodgers late last night, 7-3. Awesome AB by Lurie Garcia, 5-4 win for the White Sox over the Yankees. There was that whole, you know, NBA championship thing for the Raptors that we spent a lot of time talking about, the future of the Warriors. And, you know, with Mark Grody in for Dan today, we got a little bit of time to talk Bears. What with David Montgomery signing his rookie deal, good news there. But we were talking in the office before we started doing this thing, and I wanted to give you a minute here. You mentioned that something Taylor Gabriel, Bears wide receiver, has been talking about really kind of raised your eyebrows some. Explain.
But just a little bit, yeah. I mean, Gabriel has been using some heavy words to describe the difference in the feel of the offense this year, just in the offseason as compared to last year under Mitchell Trubisky, and saying that the difference is drastic, using that word on more than one occasion. He also used the word minimalize to describe what the offense was like last year. And what he meant by that is that I think he's saying that it didn't feel like they had the full, which they didn't. They didn't have the full playbook. They didn't have full freedom, a full feel for the offense. It wasn't the explosion that obviously a guy like Taylor Gabriel wants and needs for his skill set, because he is about speed and about the long ball. But it's interesting to hear these players speak in the terms that they have. Allen Robinson, similar, saying basically that they're years ahead this year of where they were last year.
Wow.
So, I mean, some of it might be hyperbole, maybe a little bit over the top. But when guys are all saying this individually and not together, that they're saying how different it all feels, it kind of gets you excited and makes you wonder what the offense might look like this year.
Well, definitely go Bears, right?
Go Bears.
Yeah, go Bears.
Yeah.
Tuesday, June 18th and Wednesday, June 19th, the Bernstein and McKnight Show will be out at Gallagher Way to celebrate the start of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. Actually, the whole score is going to be there from 9 until the first pitch at 7:05. I mean, come see Bernstein and McKnight, but Lawrence will be there and everybody else, too. I mean, this is going to be fun. It's all brought to you by Wintrust. It's presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. That's Tuesday, June 18th and Wednesday, June 19th. Lawrence is here. Transition is next. 670 The Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.